This episode is sponsored by Indeed. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes of this show, booking guests across time zones, tight turnaround edits, and constant time management. And when things get chaotic, you realize pretty quickly how important it is to have the right person on your team. If I had to hire someone tomorrow, I wouldn't just want a good editor. I'd want someone who understands pace in long-form interviews and can work fast under pressure. And in moments like that, you think, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Because Indeed sponsored jobs boost your listing in search results, helping you reach the candidates with the specific skills and experience you actually need. And it works. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's a serious edge when the pressure's on. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs.
Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
This episode is presented by Explorer Journeys, redefining luxury ocean travel.
Life is a roller coaster.
For the smooth operator, 2024 has been a bumpy ride.
I was tested more than I've ever been tested before. I was actually hurt. I was hurt. Now when I look back at it, I'm almost like proud that it happened because it made me a much better driver and a much better athlete in general.
From finding out he's leaving Ferrari and fighting back from appendicitis, to multiple wins and finalizing his future with Williams, Carlos Sainz has both suffered and celebrated this season. How does he really feel about being replaced at Ferrari by Lewis Hamilton? Can he understand the team's decision? Is he leaving on good terms? And could he even return one day? Here on F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson, Carlos opens up about the most challenging year of his Formula One career so far. And while he reflects fondly on his Ferrari highlights, Carlos is also looking forward to his next challenge.
I'll miss the podiums, I'll miss the celebrations, but my target is to get back to there. I'm going to Williams to try and bring Williams back to the possibility of fighting for those podiums.
Why has he chosen Williams for 2025 and beyond? Did he commit too soon? Why wouldn't he fit in at Red Bull? What's he expecting from Alex Albon as a teammate? And how will he cope fighting further down the grid? Unfiltered and full of confidence, Carlos is in fine form. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Carlos, great to see you. How are you?
All good, thank you. Everything okay?
Well, is everything okay? Because we've just got off the long flight from Las Vegas. It's tiring. I'm certainly jet-lagged. How are you?
As good as I can be. I guess everyone at this stage of the year is running a bit low on batteries. I think it's normal. When they put you a back-to-back Las Vegas, Qatar, you're always going to get to this end of the year a bit tired. But I've been dealing well with jet lag this year. I've been dealing well with my energy levels towards the second half of the season. Better compared to last year. I did a few changes on my training plan and my season management to get to this end of the year with a bit higher batteries, and they seem to be paying off.
So, do we have Pierluigi Della Bona to thank for this, your new physio?
Yeah, together between Pierluigi and my trainer, also, let's say, performance coach back at home, we've put together a plan that it seems to be working well, and I'm glad to say that all those hours of cycling and different diets, jet lag management, and different training plans are paying off.
You've been keeping those guys busier than most this year, because I'm thinking of the appendicitis in Saudi Arabia. Then there's obviously all the travel. There was the crash in Baku as well. They've obviously got some magic potions.
Yeah, I think investing on a good team around you is the best thing that a sportsman can do, because it's not on the day-to-day basis where you get to feel those things, but it's mainly when something big or when something out of the ordinary happens, like the situation in Australia with appendicitis and the situation with the crash in Baku. That's when you realize and you notice whether you have a good team around you or not. And I feel like this year I'm very proud, very happy to have the team I have, and it's paid off in the key moments of the year.
Well, let's talk about that key moment you mentioned. So you have an appendectomy in Saudi Arabia. 2 weeks later, you win in Melbourne. Just tell us now, how marginal was it? What kind of physical shape were you in?
So to give you an idea, the 7 days after the appendectomy, you called it, I was 7 straight days in bed and I couldn't brace. I couldn't use my core. Every time I sneezed or every time I coughed, I was crying on pain because they open your abdominal muscles, and that every time you contract them, it really, really hurts. So for 7 days, apart from going to a hyperbaric chamber and receiving some massage, I wasn't moving from my bed. Day 8 or day 9, I had to catch a flight to Australia, but I still hadn't moved from bed. So I was catching a flight to Australia. Like, I remember leaving home still on pain and telling my mom, well, here I go. I'm going all the way to Australia without even knowing if I'm going to be racing. And then I tell her something like, imagine if I win. And we had a laugh about it, like, well, let's try and race first and then see if you can actually win it. And my mom was reminding me that after the win, that I left home saying, imagine if I actually win. And since then, I actually realized how life can change so quickly. You know, you go from not even knowing if you're going to race in Australia, catching a flight, 24-hour flight, to suddenly 6 days later, winning in Australia. And I remember that was one of the most powerful feeling moments in my life.
And so much of driving one of these cars is your core. So how difficult was it when you were in the car?
So I remember on Wednesday, before jumping into the car, I went to a circuit. I normally don't go to circuits on Wednesdays, but in Australia I did. And I had a look at my seat, had a look at my belts and said, okay, action plan. I need to protect these wounds because I still had the very thick scars and I was still having to take care of them. I brought also a special physio specialized in an Indiva machine that gives you electromagnetic impulses to recover the wound faster. I still went to hyperbaric chambers in Australia to try and recover faster. So I had a plan just to make it happen. But on Wednesday, I still thought, I don't think I'm going to be able to race. At that point, I call Alex Albon. I say, look, I know you had the appendicitis at some stage a couple of years ago. What did you do to your belts? Alex came, gave me a hand and showed me what he did to his belts.
What did he do? Loosen them?
No, you just protect the buckle of the belt, because that's exactly where the wound is. So you just put some foam around it so you are not on the metal of the buckle. And he helped me with that. I put some extra foam here and there. And then on Thursday, I went back to the track, tried it again. I was starting to move a bit better. But then I realized every time I was jumping in and out of the car, I was very slow and I was very scared and of doing any strange movements. And I was just not feeling confident. And when I jumped in the car on Friday, my first 3 laps, I've never drove so bad a Formula One car in my life, because I just didn't trust that I could brace. So I hadn't braced for more than 10, 11 days. When I mean brace, means contracting all your muscles to hold the G-force. And I remember going into turn one on the first push lap and not hitting the brake hard because I didn't want to brace for 5G that a Formula One produces. And I was hitting the brakes 30 bar instead of 120 that I do normally, you know. And
Is that when we saw you go across the grass or not? I think so.
I think. And I first thing I told my team after the first run is I need a softer brake pedal. I normally run a very hard, very stiff brake pedal. I say, can we change very quickly the pivot of the pedal? First thing we did, change the pedal for the race, and I was driving a much softer pedal because I couldn't push it as hard. Then I had to adapt to a softer pedal from FP1. Then I started getting a bit confident, and little by little I started pushing the limits. But it was not a comfortable Friday, let's say.
What
I was a bit off the pace also.
What about Sunday? How angry was the wound on Sunday night?
It was fine. It just got better. The worst day was Friday by far. The thing that I went into Sunday was, okay, so far I've done maybe 10, 15 consecutive laps in one day. I don't know how Sunday is going to go by doing 50-something consecutive laps. And then I also remember having this feeling of being a bit more scared to crash. Like normally in NF1, I never ever thought about I'm scared of crashing. But I remember on Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday having this feeling like if I crash at 30, 40, 50 G, that is an average Formula One crash, how am I going to brace if I cannot really fully brace? I hope that my muscles yet take care of it, you know, and protect when you brace. And I've never had this feeling, but it's, yeah, not a comfortable feeling to have when you drive an F1 car.
Did you surprise yourself that weekend?
100%. But I think, well, rather than me surprising myself, the human body surprised me. Like how the human body can go from within 6 days from not moving to actually driving a Formula One car and how you recover. Obviously, I give credit to my team for giving me advices of what to do to recover faster. I give credit, obviously, to myself to put in all that work in. But the human body truly amazed me that week. And I said, yeah, this is an interesting case because I went through everything to suddenly actually perform at a high level on that Sunday.
I wonder if you found an inner confidence that weekend. Hear me out, because I felt Melbourne summed up 2024 for you. It was the moment that you became this unstoppable force, because no amount of adversity was going to stop you that weekend. Fast forward two races, China, you have a crash in Q2, quite a big one, but you get back out in Q3 and qualified within 1/100th of your teammate Charles Leclerc. I don't know, there's just this inner confidence, I feel, that has shone through ever since. Do you see that, or am I just overthinking it?
No, I think it's a good point. I think for sure life tests you. And I think at the beginning of the year of 2024, I was tested more than I've ever been tested before. And life put me in a situation that was not comfortable at all. I was told in, I think it was the end of January, beginning of February, that I was not going to continue with a team that I was 99% sure I was going to continue going into that winter. It was a massive shock to my hopes and to my whole system, and I obviously didn't enjoy that moment. I still trained and I still prepared for that season, targeting obviously to be ready to win races, to win a championship if the opportunity presented itself. And I went into that year still full of energy, but obviously with this uncomfortable situation and an uncomfortable moment, no? I still did that podium in Bahrain and I said, okay, now I get the season going. I had a really good first race, and sometimes I remember struggling a bit in Bahrain, and this year I did a really good Bahrain. I said, I think I'm quite strong this year and I can get this season going. Then you arrive to Saudi and you have the appendectomy or whatever you call it. And that was a massive blow because now I'm going to miss a race. Am I going to even miss two races? Am I going to come back to the form I was in Bahrain? Is it going to take me time? You go through this full process of doubt, no, of self-doubt. And then you go back to Australia and you win. And then you have this crash in China and you recover. All things that help build a lot my confidence and prove to me that when you have a target in your head and you are 100% committed to proving to yourself more than anyone what you're worth, the mind is a very powerful tool to overcome this. And I truly enjoyed that first half of the season for all those things.
Jackie Stewart has always said that a driver is at his peak at the age of 30. You are 30. Do you feel at the peak of your powers?
I don't know. I think there's something around the age of 30 for sure that you achieve a level of maturity, speed and experience, that for sure is at a good level. I think some drivers will achieve it at 26, others at 32. But if you want to do an average, 30 sounds like a good number. I think anyway that average, no disrespect to Sir Jackie, of course, but keeps lowering every year, no? Because we see younger and younger, younger drivers be more prepared earlier, which means you're peaking earlier, no? But I think also that peak can last longer because the way we are prepared nowadays, the way the world has developed, I think you can keep a very high level in an F1 career for quite long.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes of this show, booking guests across time zones, tight turnaround edits, and constant time management. And when things get chaotic, you realize pretty quickly how important it is to have the right person on your team. If I had to hire someone tomorrow, I wouldn't just want a good editor. I'd want someone who understands pace in long-form interviews and can work fast under pressure. And in moments like that, you think, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Because Indeed sponsored jobs boost your listing in search results, helping you reach the candidates with the specific skills and experience you actually need. And it works. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's a serious edge when the pressure's on. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes of this show, booking guests across time zones, tight turnaround edits, and constant time management. And when things get chaotic, you realize pretty quickly how important it is to have the right person on your team. If I had to hire someone tomorrow, I wouldn't just want a good editor. I'd want someone who understands pace in long-form interviews and can work fast under pressure. And in moments like that, you think, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Because Indeed sponsored jobs boost your listing in search results, helping you reach the candidates with the specific skills and experience you actually need. And it works. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's a serious edge when the pressure's on. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs.
He lost an appendix at the last Grand Prix. He wins. What a performance! What a comeback! A Ferrari 1-2, headed by Carlos Sainz, who wins the Australian Grand Prix!
This is amazing! Life is a roller coaster.
You talked a moment ago about the news that Lewis Hamilton was going to replace you at Ferrari. Can we talk about the emotional roller coaster that you've been on since that news broke at the beginning of January?
Yeah, I think I said it on the radio in Australia. No, this life is such a roller coaster. I remember being very emotional on that Australia Grand Prix podium because there was my dad there, there was obviously my manager, my girlfriend, everyone who's been next to me. I was obviously thinking about my mom, and they've all seen me suffer during the winter. And when I say suffer, I don't mean I was crying behind closed doors, but I was actually hurt. I was hurt because I didn't expect it. I wasn't prepared for that kind of news. And yeah, I was a bit in a shock for a while. And then I regroup and got training again. But yeah, I remember after that win in Australia, thinking about how lucky I am to have the people that I have around me supporting me and giving me that inner strength, you know, to overcome what it was at the time, a tough moment, that now when I look back at it, I'm almost like happy, proud that it happened, because it made me a much better driver and a much better athlete in general.
You talk about the shock of that news. Was there ever anger?
For sure. And I could sit here and say, no, I wasn't angry with anyone. But at the time when they give you this news, you're angry. You don't understand it. You curse. You don't understand anything that has happened to you. And obviously you think everything in your life is terrible and you don't understand. But then time cures everything and you start to accept certain things and you try to see everything with a lot more of a relative mind, no? And you start to comprehend and to just adapt and forgive and forget, you know, and get on with life. Just get on with it. I kept telling myself, no, just get on with it and just do your thing. And it is something that you need to see more relative as time goes by.
Forgive, forget. Do you now understand as well?
100%. And I think I understood it almost right from the beginning. I think if it would have been someone else, I would have taken a lot more longer to understand. But when you understand Lewis Hamilton, the 7-time world champion and one of the best, if not the best in history, is going to replace you at Ferrari, and Lewis has decided to do his last part of his career in Ferrari, and you need to be one of the two drivers sacrificed for that to happen, I understand. I also understand it was never going to be Charles. Charles has been the project of Ferrari ever since he's been a junior driver. He's been the center of the project for many years. I arrived to Ferrari more as a substitute of Vettel, almost a bit, not by chance, but obviously earning my place, but circumstantial rather than Charles that has been there forever. So I understood I had to be in a way the one being replaced, and I understood it from the beginning. I just obviously didn't agree so much at the time, but hey, you end up agreeing and you end up getting on with it.
Are you leaving on good terms?
Yeah, 100%. Even with Fred, with John Elkann, with everyone involved, obviously, in that decision, obviously I called them, they called me, I expressed my feelings about it.
Did you tell them what you really thought?
Yeah, of course. In that things, I've never backed off. You know, I've always said, this is what I think. The same way that I told them I understood it, then I explained, obviously, my feelings. I'm not going to tell you here what I said. Probably that's something I'm never going to say. But I told them what I thought and moved on and promised them that I was going to give my absolute best for Ferrari, even though all this has happened in the last year. And I was going to keep proving to them that I'm still a big asset for Ferrari, you know, and that's what I've been focusing on doing ever since.
Gerhard Berger left Ferrari, went back. Kimi Raikkonen left Ferrari, went back. Could you see a time that Carlos Sainz goes back?
Yeah, why not? I don't see why not. At the same time, I cannot see it happening anytime soon for the moment. But yeah, life is long. I'm 30, as you say. You see drivers at 42 in Formula One. So if I am in Formula One for as long as that, who tells you that in these next 10 years, Ferrari might need my services again in the future? This doesn't mean I wish for it to happen or I'm looking forward to it or anything like that. I have a very big target in my head now, which is help Williams to bring them back to the front of the field. But I don't think about it too much.
We'll come to Williams in a minute, but Abu Dhabi is going to be your 88th race for Ferrari. Can you just give us some words on how you feel these 4 years have gone?
I think it's been 4 years where, if you would have told me 4 years ago I would be leaving Ferrari, achieving my first wins, the way those wins came, 20-something podiums, I think I would have taken it. I said before arriving to Ferrari that my target was to become world champion. We still have a target that we might achieve it, which is the Constructors' Championship. That would be a huge thing before I leave. So I cannot be 100% happy with the way things have gone, because in those 4 years, I would have loved to fight for a world championship, become world champion. But hey, look, I'm living with my first wins in Formula One, my first 20-something podiums, and I cannot complain. I've been a Ferrari driver for 4 years. I've enjoyed every single moment of it. I've always felt loved by the Tifosi. I've enjoyed every single moment in Maranello, in Fiorano, traveling the world with wearing my Ferrari polo, you know, and I have no regrets and feel quite proud about it.
How different is the Ferrari experience to that of any other team?
It's a very special experience. It's something that even if I sit here and I try to explain it to you, I don't think I can. I'm not very good at explaining myself or explaining my feelings. But I can tell you it's something very different to ever anything that I felt before. And I've enjoyed every single moment of it. Sometimes it's tough. There's things about being a Ferrari driver that is also tough. And I'm not going to lie, it's not everything is roses and perfect. But
I'm struggling to see what's bad about being a Ferrari driver.
I'm going to focus on the positives, which is every Grand Prix is a kind of a home Grand Prix. Everywhere you go, there is Tifosi fans, and you have the most supporters out of any other place in or any other team, except maybe when we go to Zandvoort. There's definitely more Dutch fans there than Ferrari fans, but I think anywhere else in the world, it is very special knowing that everyone in the grandstand is kind of a Ferrari fan and wishes well for Ferrari. No? On the tough side, we can sit here and obviously do a different podcast one time, and I can maybe explain to you what is tough about being a Ferrari driver, but I don't want this interview to be that.
Okay, let's celebrate the wins. Which has been the best one?
It's very tough to choose. And I'm going to explain you why. Silverstone is your first one. The first one is the first one. It's incredibly special and something that you will never forget. Singapore, you can understand why Singapore was special.
The best.
You think is the best? Okay, perfect. We've just talked about Australia. I can tell you why Australia was special and why it was emotional. Because of everything that happened in January, the way I recovered from appendicitis and culminating with a win. But then you have Mexico.
He said pole yesterday was bittersweet because it gave him the feeling that Ferrari might be in a fight for a world championship and he won't be there to use it. That realization ignited a fire today. Carlos Sainz wins the Mexico City Grand Prix. A fine way to take a fourth career victory.
Ah, this feels good. Forza Ferrari. Gracias, Mexico.
And Mexico might be my last win for Ferrari. And the way I achieved it by putting myself under pressure that weekend, knowing that might be my last opportunity. And I told myself, this is going to be, or this might be your one of your last opportunities. And putting myself under pressure that weekend and managing to execute a perfect quali, perfect race in front of my parents that came to see me that weekend, in front of my best friends, girlfriend, and people that came to see me, I've felt really proud of saying I managed to put myself under this amount of pressure and still deliver and get it done.
And overtake Max Verstappen.
Yeah, the overtake for sure was cool, but it was more the way I executed the whole weekend, putting myself under that self-pressure of this might be your last one.
Another big moment for you, at least from the outside, seemed to be Monza 23. You didn't win that one, but you did keep Max in a faster car behind you for, I think, 14 laps.
Yeah.
It was good to watch.
I actually feel almost more happy about the pole position on Saturday than by keeping Max behind. I think the pole position in Monza as a Ferrari driver is something very special. Also because I love Monza as a track and I've always been quick there. Keeping Max behind, knowing he was anyway going to pass me because Red Bull that year were unstoppable. Well, they were not. I beat them in Singapore. I'm joking.
What happens when you take pole at Monza? I mean, obviously you don't pay for dinner that night and probably many offers of marriage as well. I don't know. Just does your life go completely mad when you do something like that?
Yeah, I've always dreamed about that moment. And obviously, I cannot imagine how Charles feels about winning, knowing Monza, because if I felt good being on the podium in Monza and making that pole position, winning must be something else. But I don't know, it was just a cool weekend. I remember people shouting my name in the podium. It's something I'm never going to forget. It's the typical story that when I'm 70 years old and I have grandsons, it's the typical weekend thing that I'll remember all my life, and I'll be telling them about your granddad did that, you know, and he's...
They will have listened to this. They'll be all over it.
I think so. But that's something really cool, you know. That's the kind of thing I think we all, as a driver, that's the kind of thing you remember, and all those special weekends, those different things that you've managed to do.
Look, you mentioned Charles' name there. I did want to ask you about the relationship with him. You seem to have rubbed along pretty well. It's not quite Carl Lando, though. Would you agree?
I think it's different. I think Carl Lando never fought for wins and never fought for podiums. And Carl Lando was not in a Ferrari atmosphere. It was in a McLaren atmosphere, which is relatively different. With Charles, I can tell you, outside of the track, we get on genuinely really well. And we have a lot of fun, really good conversations. We talked about, I think, any subject you can ever imagine by now, with all the time we spend away from the track together. On track, we've had our differences, we've had our rivalries, we've had our great weekends, our tougher weekends. We've always managed to keep it clean between us, and we've always managed to keep the car without any scratch from the other Ferrari car, you know. And for two drivers that for 4 years in a row, every single weekend, have shared the same piece of tarmac, because we've always qualified within a tenth of each other. We've always done every start within a position or two from each other. Every pit stop, every single lap close to each other for 4 years in a row, to manage to keep it as clean as we've kept it and as relatively easygoing as we've kept it, I think there's a merit to that, because it's not easy. We're both very competitive. We are both rivals, and yeah, 4 years, it's a lot of races. I'm calculating more or less almost 100 races sharing the same piece of tarmac, and it's not easy. I don't think as many drivers have gone for so long, so close to each other, without any issues.
It seems very intense between you. Just think back to the sprint race in China. I'm thinking of Austin. I'm even thinking of Las Vegas last weekend, actually. I mean, have you guys moved on from that one? Okay.
Yes, and we will. And we will move on. We always have. And we will always put our differences aside for the benefit of Ferrari, and because there's something bigger than each other that is Ferrari. You know, it's always been tough. I know I've sometimes done things wrong and I've apologized. He knows he's sometimes done things wrong and he's apologized. We always find kind of a middle ground to move on. And yeah, I think radios don't help, makes things bigger than what it looks then when we go back and we sit down with each other and we, let's say, digest together what has happened, because the radio is very intense. The radio is something that from home and for the media is very sassy, you know. You get all the intensity of the driver, of the how pissed off we are at the time and how angry we are. But then once that level of adrenaline comes down, and when we are behind closed doors, things are a lot less heated than what you guys can imagine. And we manage to put things aside and move on.
Do you understand why Charles was so upset after Vegas? I'm thinking of his radio message on the slowdown lap.
I understand the level of anger. I've been as angry as that many, many times before, and I can assure you I've also been in that position. I just try not to vocalize it as much in the radio, and it's something that we've both really put it as a target to say, look, I know many times you just hate me, you know, and many times we laugh about it. There's times that you hate me, there's times that I hate you, but we need to move on from that, and let's try and not use the radio. I think obviously Charles in that sense in Las Vegas couldn't control himself so much, but at the same time, I understand it. I am able to also move on from that. I'm not going to complain. I'm going to look back at the 4 years with Charles and I'm going to have a good memory. And I'm going to look back and I'm going to say he was a tough competitor, sometimes very vocal in the radio, but very tough competitor that I enjoyed every single battle with him and I enjoyed being his teammate. And I'm incredibly happy to have shared those 4 years with him because I've become a better driver thanks to him. He's become probably a better driver thanks to me. And we're just, yeah, we had a lot of fun together and we had tough, fierce competition, but always clean and always within the limits that a team would like to have.
Last question on Ferrari, and it's a bit of a segue into Williams as well, is something James Vowles, team principal of Williams, told me is that you have improved every team you've raced for in Formula One. How do you think you've helped improve Ferrari?
Yeah, I think that is obviously a very nice comment from James, and I appreciate that team principals are able to see also a bit further down just the pure results, you know, and they can also spot trends and spot these kind of details, you know, because it's something that I enjoy, it's something that I put a lot of effort into in my career, which is always try and help the team to become better and to be a better team and become faster, not only just serve as a tool for the team to just drive fast the car that they produce. I also like developing that car. I also like spending extra time with my engineers and with the engineers in general of the team, extra time with the mechanics. And that's why when I went to Ferrari, I moved to Maranello because I set myself as a target. I'm going to help Ferrari, the biggest team in the world, to try and become world champions again. And I, with my skill set and with my feedback and with my tools, I'm going to try and, yeah, be the one that helps Ferrari to come back to the top, you know. And it's something I enjoy. I intrinsically get involved in all these conversations because I enjoy it. And I, yeah, try to do the best I can to give the best possible feedback and the best possible directions.
Are we talking operationally? Are we talking technically? Or is it across every aspect of performance?
I think it's every aspect. I think there's things that a driver can have more effect than others. Obviously, performance with setup work and understanding of the setup and the feeling of testing things to then tell the team, this works, this doesn't work, this we should push more in this direction, this is definitely not the right direction, things like that. Operationally also, a bit less, because I am not a team principal, I'm not someone that can manage a team. I don't have the skill set, at least not yet at this age, but I can say operationally how, doesn't matter if it's strategy, pit stops or whatever, I can give some advice or give an opinion of how I think or how I feel we're doing things, no? And that's where I obviously don't get too much into it because I don't want to be too much in a way. And I obviously, I'm not a manager, as I said, I'm just a racing driver. But that's also something that I enjoy and that's something that I will always give feedback about.
Keeping things calm on the pit wall, do you feel you've had an influence on that?
I don't know. I think Ferrari, honestly, in that sense, and also Fred, have done a very good job at improving that side of things. And I think this year proves also how much that department, strategy group, and race management has improved. Don't get me wrong, a better race day car also helps. But I think in that sense, Ferrari has done massive step forwards recently. Vegas was not our best example about it for sure, but everyone can have an off day or we all had an off day in Vegas. But if you get the average of the 2024 season, the progress that Ferrari has shown in that sense is huge. And I think it's just down to everyone involved in this team about it.
This episode is sponsored by Indeed. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes of this show, booking guests across time zones, tight turnaround edits, and constant time management. And when things get chaotic, you realize pretty quickly how important it is to have the right person on your team. If I had to hire someone tomorrow, I wouldn't just want a good editor. I'd want someone who understands pace in long-form interviews and can work fast under pressure. And in moments like that, you think, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Because Indeed sponsored jobs boost your listing in search results, helping you reach the candidates with the specific skills and experience you actually need. And it works. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 95% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. That's a serious edge when the pressure's on. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Right, let's throw it forward now. Is everything after Ferrari going to feel a bit of a step down?
No, 100% no. I'll still be a Formula One driver, enjoying my life. There will be positives, there will be other negatives, but you need to remember that what I enjoy is putting on a helmet and driving a Formula One car. Doesn't matter the color. I just enjoy driving. I enjoy the competition. I enjoy challenging myself. And especially more than anything, I enjoy living a weekend thinking there is nothing else I could have done to make that car faster than what I did and to drive as fast as I did, because I think I've managed to execute the maximum out of the package. And that's what I will be trying to do weekend in, weekend out next year.
And you can get that same sense of satisfaction battling for Alex Albon didn't get out of Q1 in Vegas. You think you can get that same sense of satisfaction back there that you do at the front?
I think inside of yourself, yes. Then for sure, I'll miss the podiums. I'll miss the celebrations. I'll miss being on a headline because I've won or because I've been on a pole or because whatever. But my target is to get back to there. I'm not going to Williams just to extract the maximum out of the car. I'm going to Williams to try and bring Williams back to the possibility of fighting for those podiums and for the possibility of fighting for those things that also fulfill me. And I am a driver that I think is going to enjoy that process, because I enjoy trying to help, trying to get involved in just making everything work better. No, and so I'm just looking forward to it a lot more than what people back at home might be thinking. Like, I am so happy and so motivated about that possibility and about that possibility happen that I don't think people can imagine how actually excited I am about it.
Tell us about the decision-making process, because throughout the summer, you were the most wanted man who was available on the grid. Alpine wanted you. Lots of people actually wanted you. Why Williams?
I remember having a very tough time, let's say, during those months, because I had to decide about my future, and it was not easy. Yeah, I had, as you said, plenty of options, plenty of possibilities, trying to find out who was going to be the fastest team in 25 and 26 and who was going to deliver more downforce, deliver more power for the 26th generation of cars. And I was trying to do all my questions about to every team and to every technical director, team principal, asking those questions. And then suddenly, just before the summer break, I realized this is not going to be what makes or breaks my decision making. I think what's gonna make or break my decision making is the people in the team. And I remember thinking, JV, James Vowles, and his team have shown me an incredible level of commitment towards me, and they've showed me a project and a vision of the future that has convinced me. And I'm gonna trust the people. I'm gonna trust the people that I'm joining, rather than the downforce, the things that I've said before. No, and I'm gonna follow that instinct. And my instinct at the time told me JV and his team have produced a project that I was really excited about, and I was just gonna trust that instinct, because I remember leaving McLaren in 2020 feeling these people, Andrea Stella, Zak Brown and company, these people are world champion material. Like, I felt McLaren was one day going to be world champion back again with those key members. And then suddenly I realized 2024, McLaren is the fastest team on the grid for a few races. So my instinct was right when I left McLaren. So I said, I'm just going to follow my instinct and say JV and his team.
Did you get the heads up about Hamilton? Because James has told us on this podcast that your first meeting with him was Abu Dhabi last year. That was before Lewis had pulled the trigger and announced that he was leaving, was going to Ferrari, sorry.
I'm going to be extremely honest with you. When I talk to JV in Abu Dhabi, when my management team says, James, thanks for your interest, but 90% that we're going to renew our contract with Ferrari, but we will let you know what happens during these next months. That was my answer. And thanks for your interest. Great. But at the moment, it looks like we're just going to, at least that's what we're receiving feedback from Ferrari, that it's almost a done deal. That's how shocking it was then what happened.
How long do you give Williams? Because James Vowles has also said that the facilities in Grove are 20 years behind those at Mercedes.
Yeah.
That's not a quick fix.
And almost, I wouldn't say I don't care, but I've seen what they've shown me and I'm 100% convinced James and his team are doing every necessary work to put together a plan and an infrastructure that it's capable of being at the top again in Formula One. So, yeah, I know that right now that place is not up to the standards like it's Maranello, but they have everything in plan to get it to work. How long do I keep them? I don't know. How long do they give me to help them? I don't know. It's a relative question again. I'm only worried about the more immediate future and how much progress we're going to make during 25 and during 26. This is what I care mostly about, and to see the trend and the tendency, because that's the momentum that we need to start building from next year onwards.
I get the potential at Williams, but do you think you committed too soon? In that, with Checo Perez's troubles at Red Bull, there might be an option there now if you were still available. Was there ever an option for a one-year deal at Mercedes?
I think, if anything, a lot of people in the paddock will think I took too long, especially a lot of my fellow drivers thought I was taking too long to decide. No, I don't think I fit into the Red Bull situation. They had me available for 6 months and they didn't pick me.
But at that time, Checo was still doing a decent job. He was finishing on the podium in the early races of the year.
No, it was a lot later. It was until the summer break and Red Bull had me available for 6 months and they didn't pick me. And I think it's because I simply don't fit into the type of driver that they need right now in Red Bull. And I'm completely fine with that. Like, that's, if anything, they're making me a favor. So I don't see myself as a lost opportunity to not wait to December. That's not how the Formula One market works. If I would have done that, I might have even been without a contract, a Formula One contract for 25, if I keep Alpine, Williams or Audi waiting until this late. And I also have obviously an ego, and I'm going to go with the people that they really want me. And James, I cannot explain to you how much I felt wanted and how much I felt pushed to join them. And they did an incredible job also in convincing me, because, yeah, it is a project that, as I said before, I just look forward to it.
James has actually described trying to sign you as a courtship. He said we would be going out to dinner and it's kind of like, who was going to make the first move?
Yeah, maybe he went a bit too far with that comment, but no, he just did a good job in that sense. So the investment group, Loyalton, that I and the people that I've met from the group gave me a great level of trust, you know. And as I said, if the other few other top teams that were available at the time, I would have fit the project that they were thinking, they had 6 months to decide, and they didn't. So,
Carlos, do you like the fact that Williams are a bunch of racers with a capital R? Even James does a bit of racing himself. James Matthews, who's one of the board members there, did a lot of racing in the UK before he went on to do other things. Does that appeal to you that it's a proper racing team?
100%. This was also part of all the mix of things that helped me took that decision. Let's see, the last time that I was in a team of pure races, that was, I think, not disrespect over to Ferrari, it's also a team of races, but McLaren had a bit that similar vibe, if you want to.
Oh, with Zach.
With Zach and Andrea Stella, Seidel at the time, and had that similar kind of vibe. And I think I thrived, you know, in that kind of environment in McLaren. So I saw myself going to Williams, thinking it's an environment where I think I can show the best version of myself, that is my target for the future.
And what about Alex Albon? He's obviously given you good doctor's advice earlier in the year, but do you rate him as a racing driver?
I don't only rate him as a racing driver, as a really good racing driver, but also as a great human. I think if you ask the other 19 drivers in the grid, who do you think is one of the genuine good guys in the grid, I think they would all say Alex. I've never been teammates with Alex. I've never seen his data, but I've obviously asked Lando, Charles or George that are have raced with Alex, and they all say people don't know how fast Alex is. Like, everyone is like telling me he's genuinely a really, really good driver, like super talented and super fast. They've all raced against him. Me, I think only 1 year of karting, but I don't remember much. And I think it's a good cocktail of things, not just a good human being and a great racing driver that I'm looking forward to work with and just work together. I think what Williams needs right now is two guys like Alex and me pushing flat out to make that process, make that journey as short as possible to bring Williams back to where they deserve to be.
James thinks he's got the best driver lineup on the grid next year.
I think it's a great statement by James. I wouldn't obviously disrespect Charles and Lewis as teammates. But yeah, apart from them, I think Williams has a very strong lineup.
Well, Carlos, it's been wonderful to chat. I did just want to end this going back to Ferrari because we've got a guest who's going to join us now. I wonder if Ricardo could come in.
Oh, my God. Ricardo Adami. Tricky Ricky.
And P1, baby, P1. Vamos! Vamos, Ricky! What a mega job you did there. What a smart race.
This is my first smooth operation in Ferrari. Smooth operator.
This is a surprise.
So we have special guests joining us now. Ricardo Adami, race engineer, done all the races with you, Carlos, hasn't he? How would you describe your relationship with each other?
Ricky is exactly the guy that I needed when I arrived to Ferrari. A guy that knew the team inside out. He had been many years in Ferrari at the time, and I remember going into such a big organization, such a big world, without knowing anything about the insides of the team. And Ricky did a very good job at introducing me to the key people, introducing me to all the Maranello fabric and all the mechanics he has a great relationship with, and obviously he helped me also with, he knew very well the car, he knew very well Sebastian, the setups of the car, the driving styles of Sebastian against Charles, and we just started forming a very strong relationship that helped me adapt to Ferrari, I think the quickest that I could have adapted.
Well, how quickly did it happen, that gelling process, Ricardo?
Yeah, was since day one, I think we were on the same wavelength. So thinking the same way, having similar experience in a way, because from Toro Rosso days, I knew many engineers that worked with him. So I had some advices how he was and how to tackle our project together. And yeah, it was, as I say, since the beginning, very good relationship. We were on the same page on developing the car and working together. He has a very strong attitude to workload, so very high workload together on the simulator and developing the car and understanding each other since the beginning. And yeah, the results are there to see. After 4 years, we are fighting for the championship together, so developing the car has worked quite nicely.
Ricky, what's his greatest strength?
Yeah, as I say, the is a very hard worker, level of details that we look in together and developing the car and the setup, I would say that's his strength. And what I've noticed is and the cause and action So he's able to understand technical stuff and then applying driving. That is not easy, you know. It's easy to say, but then to do it is another thing.
What do you think has been his greatest performance for Ferrari so far?
Mexico, outstanding, yeah. Mexico
more
was
than Singapore.
More than Singapore. Singapore was more of a fox driving, you know, smart,
quite good.
Understanding and playing. But yeah, as I said, Mexico was fair and square and dominating, as I told him, after the race that weekend since FP1, basically.
Are you going to miss this guy?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We will miss him as a group.
Will you miss Ricky?
100%. I think we've built a lot of good memories. My first wins have not only come with Ferrari, but have come with Ricky, with Callum, with my mechanics, with Corte, and the other engineers of my group, let's say. And it is something that obviously I'm going to keep for the rest of my life, really good memories, no? And I would be very happy and very open to work with them in the future, because they've been a great part of the success that we've had together in Ferrari.
Ricky, you worked with Sebastian, well, lots of great drivers, but
yeah.
Sebastian Vettel is one that springs to mind. Do you see similarities between Carlos and Sebastian?
Yes, indeed. They are quite similar in terms of simulator, working with the simulator, developing, as I say, the car, the understanding of the car behavior and the sensitivity to stuff. So he's quite sensitive on changes of the car. At times, you know, we change stuff blind, as it is able to recognize what has been changed in the car. That is quite impressive. That came to my mind, very similar to Sebastian.
We started this podcast talking about Melbourne and the job that Carlos had to do during the build-up, but also during the weekend, softening the brake pedal, things like that. Can I get your memories of that weekend as well?
Yeah, it was quite intense because, from Wednesday it was, for the seat belts that didn't arrive from home, we were a bit upset and say, well, we do it, you know? And then it was quite shocking, the very first lap you did in FP1.
I was looking really far off.
I was looking at the other engineers and I was saying, are we really sure we want to do it? You know, because I had just the surgery.
Oli was warming up already after my first lap. Oli was already warming up, like, I'm definitely driving. I was like five seconds off the pace. Not even pushing, because as I said, I didn't trust that I could push, you know, but very quickly, I got within a decent margin, no, and we started working on the brake pedal and things to make me feel a bit more comfortable.
Well, Ricky, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great to have Ricky join us. One of the things you said there, I would like to work with him in the future. Did you ever think about trying to take him with you to Williams?
Of course, there's these kind of things come to your head. But at the same time, you also need to be realistic. And as much as working relationships are important, the personal ones are also fundamental. And I know, obviously, his family is in Italy, his kids, they live 10 minutes away from Maranello. And I also realize, like, there's things that sometimes you wish that could happen, but also there's other things that realistically, you know, they're probably never going to happen. So you never even try to make them happen because they are a bit too far from the possible reality. And I think a guy like Ricky, honestly, is a guy that will always be a Ferrari guy, and he deserves, you know, to be there, keep being successful there like he's been. And he's also very loved and very respected by everyone there.
Well, Carlos, it's been great to catch up after a couple of years. If we can just end this in what I call the traditional way, our quick fire questions.
Okay.
What else are you good at?
I would say in general, just sports. I'm at a decent level at every sport practice.
Golf would be the main one?
Yeah.
You played the old course at St Andrews in the summer, didn't
you? Yeah, I was going through a very tough moment in my golfing career and I didn't play my best. If I would play that course that day, the level that I'm playing now, that could have been so much better.
Well, but, course but I record, I think, is 61.
No, I'm not talking about course records. Obviously, I'm not a pro and anything like that. But the other day, I shot my first round on the par, one under, in a tournament back in Spain. I'm still a 5 handicap, but it's coming down.
And tennis is another sport, squash?
tennis, everything.
Your old
with
man
a racket.
Was a good squash player,
yeah,
wasn't he?
My dad was a squash champion. But everything with a racket, I can play fairly well. Mountain skiing, wakeboarding, I don't know, football, I can play decent. If you tell me a sport and you say, I challenge you, you might beat me the first time, but maybe in 2 months I come back and I'm so upset about having lost that I will get to a good level.
Right, I'm thinking paddle now. Are you part of the paddle gang in the paddock?
I'm not part of the gang. I don't play with the gang because they're still not at the level, but I can play paddle.
Right, you've laid down a marker now. Look, next one. Which racing person, dead or alive, would you want to be stuck in a lift with?
That's a difficult one. Senna. I think just share a good conversation with Senna, I would love to.
What would you ask him?
So many things. I honestly don't know where I would start. I would just know I would be very annoying asking a lot of questions.
Who would play you in a film?
Who looks like me? Well, it doesn't really matter. No, you can... I like, as actors, I really like Will Smith. I like, if it has to be an action movie, maybe Tom Cruise could be cool.
Who is the coolest person in your contacts?
I don't know. I'm lucky to have in my contacts people like Nadal, Rafa Nadal.
That's pretty darn cool.
Pogacar.
That's
the best ever at something, you know. For me, it's cool. And for me, Rafa is the best or one of the best ever at tennis. Tadej Pogacar is going to be the best ever in cycling. Probably there's also people from some other sport that are the best.
And do
ever.
They inspire you when you're doing those sports?
Not when I'm doing them, because I'm so far from them that it is not... I don't think about their level when I play that sport. What I think is what they manage to achieve in sport in general and the mentality they have. I know how tough it is to win, but the way that these people manage to dominate and win so much in their sport is truly impressive. And especially I like people with the way they go about winning. It's, for me, it's not only about winning, it's the way they go about it and being an example to the younger generation. And for me, these two that I just mentioned is the perfect example for the younger generation of how to approach competition, how to approach life as an athlete. And yeah, they're just a truly great example.
Final one. If you hosted a podcast like this, who would be your first guest?
I think these two could be a good start. And then I would try and get Tiger Woods in the podcast. I would try and get Ilia Topuria, the UFC fighter, Spanish. I've become a big fan of him recently. Just the greatest. If I could just get the contact of the greatest at things, you know, and
I'd listen
start
to all of
challenging
those.
Them with tricky questions like you do, you know.
Is there a Formula One person you bring on?
Yeah, for sure. I would like to bring fellow racing drivers and try and open them up and have the kind of conversation that I can have with Charles or Lando about racing and see, let the people at home see the kind of stuff that we can talk about and discuss. I think this would be very cool.
Okay, so you achieved that with Charles and Lando, but is there another driver that you would be intrigued to unpick?
I think those two are the ones that I could get the most out of because I know them very well. And I would say, remember this time, what did you think when I did this? Or when did you think that with the others, yeah, with my teammates, ex-teammates, I would manage to get more saucy stuff.
I think we'll leave it there. Carlos, what a great chat. Thank you very much for your time. It's been
Cheers.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Now there's an idea. I can see Carlos hosting a show called The Greatest and getting the likes of Nadal, Woods, Tom Cruise and the rest on for a great chat. I would definitely tune into that. Now, I really hope you enjoyed hearing from Carlos as much as I did. He was incredibly candid, wasn't he? And he seems at peace with his move to Williams. Initially, it'll be a different experience compared to Ferrari, but he seems more than up for the challenge. Thanks for your time, Carlos. And thanks too to Ricardo Adami for joining us. The bond between Carlos and Ricky is clear, and it's sad to see them go their separate ways at the end of the year.
Now, as ever, please let me know what you think of this episode. I love reading your messages, so please send what you think through all the usual means. I'm at TomClarksonF1, or you can use the hashtag F1BeyondTheGrid. Which brings me on to what you sent in about last week's show with Andy Stevenson, who celebrated his 600th Grand Prix in Las Vegas. I was taken aback by the number of messages we were sent, and I thought this from Paul Hicklin summed up what a lot of you thought. I've listened to every episode of F1 Beyond the Grid, and I can't think of a better one than this, says Paul. Andy has some great stories from his 600 races in Formula One, and the one where Frentzen raced at Manicourt with a broken leg was fantastic. Andy's passion, enthusiasm, and energy for F1 is unrivaled. Well, thanks for that note, Paul. It was great to hear from you. And a large number of people from inside the F1 paddock have told me how much they enjoyed listening to Andy as well. It definitely hit a chord. Well, that's almost it for this week. A couple of parish notices before I go. F1 Nation's review of the Qatar Grand Prix is out now. I'm joined by Alex Jakes and Pietro Fittipaldi to reflect on Max Verstappen's surprising victory in Lusail and the battle between McLaren and Ferrari to become world champions. And the latest episode of F1 Explains features McLaren reserve driver Pato O'Ward, who's answering your questions. Both of those shows are on your podcast app now. So thank you very much for listening, and I will of course be back next week with a special guest or two from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.